If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Felt like it could have been opportunity for Norwich City turned into a week of disappointment. Now mid-table in the Championship, definitely going to be playing Championship football again. And unfortunately, we're talking about back-to-back defeat since you last joined us post-Oxford United last weekend. I still really can't get my head around the collapse against Sheffield Wednesday and, of course, the defeat to Bristol City on Friday night. We've just made the long trip back from that part, what is it, the West Country? I think that's the description we'd use of it. And we are now in Redwell Brewery in Norwich. Paddy is sampling some of the goods.
A fine establishment, Connor.
A fine establishment. Not just alcoholic beverages, they also do pizzas as well. So, get yourself down here. It's a nice little space. It's very busy. There's a nice hubbub around here, which is great for talking about all things Norwich City. This is, of course, the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with First Bus. I'm your host, Connor Southall, joined by Paddy Davitt to my left, Sam Seaman to my right, and I think we're all a little bit wary after Friday night football, but there we go. Paddy, there's lots of frustration in the air. You can sense it, you can feel it when you talk to Norwich fans, when you take a gauge of social media. Not always the most accurate way of looking at things, because it is such a small sample size. You never get a fully representative view of how a fan base is feeling. And I guess we can balance that by saying the response at the final whistle at Ashton Gate of the 1,100 or so Norwich fans that were there was really positive. So there is maybe not for everybody, but you can understand at least at the moment why there's significant frustration about the way, I guess, this week and probably the last eight games have unfolded. One win in eight now for Johannes Ovtorup's side.
And you reference him there, the man himself. He shares that frustration. He knows it's not good enough. He said last night he wants to be higher up the table, as those Norwich fans do. And on that, there is unanimity. I don't think there's anybody outside the club or inside the club who would be happy with this state of affairs in terms of 12th in the table as we record, one win in eight, as you say. And for me, below those numbers, it's just, again, we saw it last night, we saw it Tuesday night, you know, the way they're giving goals away, the individual errors, the collective errors, the head loss moments. But also, more worryingly now, because this rests firmly for me with the coaches, is the structural deficiencies. You know, they're so positionally out of sync. You know, those two Bristol goals last night, they're all over the shop. And that should be coached 7-8 months into this man's project. Surely we shouldn't be still seeing them sort of errors still, residually. And that, for me, is more troubling than, you know, maybe the broad brushstrokes of it's one win in eight, because, of course, within those eight games was Derby, was Blackburn. And they could have, those results could have easily tipped the other way. And even last night, as much as I've highlighted the first 20 minutes, and we'll get into it in due course, to go to a team who went fifth last night and have 20 shots, expected goals up around three, and within those 20 shots, I would classify four or five really good opportunities, ample opportunities to win multiple games of football away from home, and that's not easy to do in the Championship. So many good things, but being dragged down by too many negative things. And the upshot is that frustration that is clearly palpable, and it's growing, let's be honest. Like you, Connor, I'd be loath to benchmark definitively by the mood on social media platforms, but there's absolutely no doubt that there is a growing number questioning Torup's in-game personnel, faith in certain players, those deficiencies I'm talking about, out of possession. And all of that is valid for me, because we're at a stage now in his first season where I think we should expect better with, and we insert it all the time, the inevitable caveats about those injuries, those disciplinary episodes, which have not been in his gift to get that consistency in selection. That's all a given. But that still doesn't excuse how they didn't defend for goals one and two last night. And that, for me, is in here and now more troubling than you know, the fact they've only won one of these last eight games. And yeah, frustration is there, and I think it's right to be there, and I think it's right that questions are being asked, because for me that isn't acceptable. That first 20 minutes to be so good going the other way, and of course they missed that clinical edge, granted, but then to concede in the manner they do off the back of what they did in that second half against Sheffield Wednesday, you just feel, as every time you watch this team now, that you're almost waiting for that to happen, and that's not a good space to be in.
No, it isn't, and it brings and drags down so much of the good work that they do, and there is good work in there, and with Norwich at the moment, it's good, bad, and ugly, Sam, isn't it? And I guess when we talk about ugly, we're talking about the defensive aspects, and you know, I probably sound like a broken record because we've spoken about it a lot this season, but Paddy's referenced it, 20 shots, they had more than enough opportunities there to leave Ashton Gate with probably a victory, to be honest, let alone a point, but a lack of clinical edge at one end, well, probably both ends, really. I mean, I took a picture of the stats after Bristol City's second goal. It was two shots for them, two shots on target, two goals. And that is the story, certainly, of the recent weeks. You think Blackburn scored with their only shot on target, Oxford scored with their only shot on target. I mean, it's a pattern. It speaks to, as Paddy has spoken to, some of the structural issues that they have defensively, because at times they are Sunday league standard or out of possession.
Yeah, I think you have to give Bristol City credit, because I thought actually it was the type of clinical performance that you associate more with Premier League teams than you do with Championship teams. Like you said, two chances, they put them away, and they are in that sort of, they've got that sort of confidence at this time of the season to be able to do that. So I think that was part of it. But as you said, you know, defensively it was all over the place. I think me and you, after the first goal went in, or was it the second one? The Naki Wells, that was the second one. And you only looked at sort of 3 seconds of the video, and we could pull apart sort of five different errors in terms of the structure of it, players in quite strange positions, gaps between players that there shouldn't have been, a failure to react to certain situations. And when you've got players in there who I think have shown they've got really good defensive instincts at times, particularly Shane Duffy, whose old school defending you can usually rely on, you know. I know there's always been this question about his ability on the ball, and that's sort of fluctuated throughout the season, but for most of his Norwich career, what's been a constant is his ability to time tackles, to get close to players, to make blocks, clearances, tackles, and that wasn't really there last night either. So as much as it is the structural issues, and I'm sure we'll come on to those in greater detail, I thought midfield specifically, when you've got Jakob Sorensen and Kenny McLean in there, you definitely want a bit more solidity. But as much as we talk about those structural issues, there were a lot of individual errors in there as well. And whether that comes down to confidence or coaching or, you know, the time of the season that it is, I suppose that's for Johannes Ovtorup to work out. But it feels like there aren't many things going for Norwich at the moment. And when you do need to sort of drag yourself through a tough period of form, you need to get the basics right. And last night, they definitely didn't do that.
I mean, there's a theme, Paddy, isn't there? I mean, you're in these press conferences. You hear the opposition managers speak. We had Gary Rowett the other week speak about how a five at the back nullified them. You had Liam Manning last night speaking about just how important it is, essentially, to get the press right, particularly in those phases of deep build-up. And that gets to the core of it at the moment, doesn't it? This Norwich City team is too easy to work out, too easy to counteract.
And that's my point, and that's where, not that it matters my frustration, but that's where I would be frustrated, is that feels coachable. That, you know, whether it's change in personnel, which he didn't take too kindly to when I suggested that after the Sheffield Wednesday debacle, because he obviously believes these players and he trusts in these players, but it's either personnel or you do something different with them coaching wise, because the messages aren't getting through. Whatever they're trying to do out of possession isn't working, and we know it's not working, because goals for, I think only Leeds have scored more in the Championship, so there's absolutely nothing wrong with what they do in the final third. Yes, they could have been more clinical on Friday night at Bristol, but chance creation, they're there. Torup Hoff ball seems to have already bedded its way in, but the contrast out of possession, I think only in the top half, Sheffield Wednesday have conceded more.
Well, let me throw another stat in. More goals conceded than Derby this year, who are before the Saturday games, yeah, are in the bottom three.
And I think bar Sheffield Wednesday, it's only four or maybe five of those teams down the bottom who have conceded more goals. You don't need to be a UEFA pro licensed coach to know that that's the problem. That is the handbrake for any progress, any sustained progress. So for me, that is work on the coaching pitch. You know, what are they doing when, to take that first Bristol goal last night, ball's fizzed into Emi Marcondes, bounces off him, but he's in the middle of the Bristol half. How does it, in two phases of play, get to in the back of George Long's net? And you look back at that goal, and it's Sorensen, Doyle. Doyle is so far out of position for a left-back. What is he doing in that position?
He goes to press, doesn't he, and gets it completely wrong, which is the story of the night.
Yeah, so two Norwich players completely bypassed, then they're breaking on you. Then Cordoba is obviously then forced to come out wide from centre-back to cover the space where Doyle should be. He allows Sykes to cut inside. It's an excellent finish, don't get me wrong. But that feels like an avoidable goal. Johannes, specifically on that, said, and he said, I don't like saying, well, maybe this cuts to the heart of it. I don't, almost like it's a dirty thing for him to express publicly, but that should be a foul. That should be Sorensen or Doyle skiving down the Bristol player. You take your yellow card, you take your medicine, but then Bristol are starting the restart from inside their own half, not picking the ball out of George Long's net, and Norwich are one behind. That comes down to, again, game management. It comes down to Nous, what he said after the Sheffield Wednesday game. These players, collectively, need to understand what it takes to win a game of football in the Championship. That's a worrying statement from your head coach 7-8 months in. That he, not so much the older players, but that the younger ones don't understand by now what it takes to win it, because they're having so many negative experiences. And I think that's probably where, go back to the fan base, when does the penny drop? When does the needle tip towards, right, we're through enough of these experiences, don't like that, don't want to keep experiencing that, we're coming out the other side of it. There's no discernible sign they're out coming out the other side of it. And until that's the case, you're going to get an increasingly negative reaction towards Torup and his players. So it feels, not to be too simplistic about it, but it feels something that should be coachable, that you can actually work on out of possession, shape work, triggers, not being so easy to play through and against. But here we are, and that game has effectively been decided on two transition moments where Norwich have been picked apart individually, structurally, collectively. And it doesn't matter that they had 20 shots and three expected goals and probably on the balance of play should have got something from that game. Games are decided in the Championship on those moments. And for Norwich to be consistently falling the wrong side of it, it's not bad luck. It's not great play from the opposition. Look at your own, what you're not doing, and deal with it. And as I say, whether that is coaching or whether that is we get to the summer and you'll see another turn of the wheel in terms of recruitment. And I think it everything, when you speak to the people who matter at a club, it feels like it's going to be a big turn of the wheel again. So is that an admission that they simply don't feel, maybe privately, that they have the players out of possession to deliver what Torup wants?
Well, they don't. I mean, we could talk about and reopen debates around defensive midfielders, and that. I thought midfield was a big issue on Friday night. They were too static. They didn't get the press right. And I mean, as soon as you get your positions wrong with that, you're easy to bypass. Bristol City had runners. It took a move to a three at the back, a five at the back, however you want to categorise it, to counteract that. And that then affects how you play out. That affects your confidence. All of these things affect what you then go on to do in possession. And It's so frustrating, Sam, because again, we've been here all season. We've seen this Norwich City team when it's at its very best, and you can be the best in possession team in the world. And I didn't think their deep build-up was necessarily great, particularly in that first 20 minutes that we talk about. But generally, they're a good team in possession. They create chances. They create a lot of them, and good chances as well at that. What we don't see at the other end of the pitch is teams having to work hard, having to sweat, having to engineer really good moments. I couldn't tell you the last time that Norwich conceded their goal where I thought, do you know what, that's there's probably not a lot you could have done about that. Maybe the Fleming one against Burnley. But even then, I think we can nitpick why they didn't press him earlier. But look, he's hit a ball from 30 yards into the top corner, fair play. There's not been many of those. They've been crap goals, to be honest, for want of a better word. And that is, I think, probably going on to Paddy's point. If there is a positive, I guess, of this, it is that it feels to an extent fixable. It feels like something that can be fixed. We're not talking and sort of scratching our heads and saying, why is this happening? It's obvious, as Paddy said, you don't need to be a UEFA licensed coach to see the issues and where they are probably failing to be a team where they are able to then push for the playoffs or maybe a little bit of a better platform than they have done this season.
Yeah, I suppose so, but then if we can pinpoint these issues all season long and they seem to be so consistent, then why haven't they been sorted yet? I mean, yes, we can talk about the issues with certain players who maybe won't be at Norwich when and if they eventually do have the success they want and they do compete for promotion to the Premier League. But they're all professional players who have played a lot of games at Championship level and are good enough really to be coached into sorting out these quite basic problems. You know, I think that's where the questions have to be asked, and I think most people still are on board with the long-term vision and what Norwich are trying to do. They're willing to be patient, but they also want to see progress. And I think a lot of people are looking back at wins against Watford and Hull early on in the season, and they're thinking, actually, in many ways, things have got worse. So I do agree that it's probably better to see that, at least in the short term, to see the errors and say, okay, well, those are errors that should be sorted out, really. But in a sense, would it be more acceptable if this was just a terrible squad and they just weren't quite good enough? And then you know that Ben Napa is going into the summer, backed by Mark Attanasio, able to bring in players who will increase the quality of the squad significantly. Maybe in some ways that would be an easier route to success than trying to work out these tactical and technical problems, which they haven't been able to so far this season. So I think, obviously, pre-season and next season, and I'm jumping ahead of it here, but that will help, and that does give them an opportunity to reset and sort those problems. But there is a bit of a paradox there in terms of, yes, they should be easy problems.
Don't create a spillage.
That would be a terrible advert for us the first time we come here in a year, and I'm tipping stuff on the tables. But yes, there is, you know, a school of thought that if they're easy problems to solve, then that's good news. But also, why haven't they been solved already, and how does it go from here? So those are some of the questions that Norwich have to answer, because, I mean, we were speaking about it yesterday during the game, and you sort of touched on it there. It's always going to be a difficult equation when Norwich have to work so, so hard to score goals, and opposition teams don't have to at all, because right now the setup is, you know, you go into any game against Norwich as average Championship team who can defend decently enough, make sure you don't make any big mistakes, and Norwich will probably give you two big chances, and that's how most teams can go into games. So unless they stop giving away those errors, then all of that proactive approach and wanting to be attacking, wanting to make it about them, it's not going to result in much profit for them, because, you know, that equation is always a difficult one. So, yeah, I think there's a lot for them to sort going forward. As you said, there are ways to look at it that you can certainly feel positive about it. But in another way, it does feel like, why hasn't it been solved yet? And I suppose that's the task for Johannes Sovtorup, more in the next eight games than after that, because then I think after that you're broadening it out and you're looking at the bigger picture. But in the next eight games, I'm sure him and his coaching team will be very focused on ironing out those pretty basic errors.
Let me play devil's advocate, Paddy, because I think what you've said is essentially where I am on this in terms of my opinion. But I'm sure if Johannes would sit here, he would say, well, look at the stats, because I highlighted this in a piece I wrote, I think, a couple of weeks ago, in terms of they don't concede. I think it was at that time of writing, which was post Oxford. I don't know exactly where it is now, but it was the seven fewest, basically, in the division of shots on target. The chances that they create aren't massive in terms of what they give up, yet they concede goals. And I think even when you compare them to last season, their goalkeepers are probably better protected this year than they were last season, when a lot of the time we were speaking about Angus Gunn performing really, really well. So is this as much a personnel point as it is a coaching point for you? Is it both of those elements that need to be looked into? And I guess probably the goalkeeping element to it as well, because you know, you look at some of the saves that Max O'Leary made on Friday night compared to, obviously, George Long made an excellent save. We can question the first one and maybe the need to make the second one, but he did make a very good save. But that hasn't been a consistent theme of any of the goalkeepers that Norwich City have played this season.
No, and I know there's been focus made in certain quarters about focusing in on the actual keepers and their shot saves. And it's not a very, if you again, benchmark completely on the stats, it doesn't cast any of the Norwich keepers in a favourable light. On that double save from George Long, yeah, I mean, the first one, I don't quite know what he's doing, because they're always taught to get the ball as far away as they can. But again, who is the quickest to react? Naki Wells. You look at the footage there, Cordoba and Duffy don't even anticipate that scenario could likely happen. So again, it comes down to decision making for me. And in those cases, you've got one very experienced player and one player who's an international for his country. So it's a mindset for me. It's, do they actually want to do what it's required to keep the ball out of the net? And that, then it brings the keepers into play. And it isn't just a focus narrowly on the defence. We've talked about the central midfield areas, and I don't think that feels that that protection is there. The pitch becomes far too stretched, far too many gaps. It feels a little bit one-paced with some of the selections in central midfield. I don't think there's that dynamism, in contrast to the way that those Bristol midfielders got around the park and were able to get up in the faces of the Norwich players, particularly Cordoba for that second goal. So that needs to be addressed for me. The reality is it's both, to go back to your original question. You can't just say it's on the personnel, because he has changed and chopped, even certain occasions where he's had no choice, he's had to do that. But we've had different players come in and out of that defensive unit, if we want to look at it purely in defensive unit terms, and the goals they concede are still very similar. You know, the set piece vulnerability is there, it's been there all season, and as I say, in open play, structurally out of possession, they're not good enough. That's clear. And that's why I think it also tips towards the coaching element, because that should be something with the amount and that analysis, analysts at Colney, the amount of prep work they can do. Yes, we know there's periods in the season, and we're in a week now where it's relentless and it's just game cycle and recovery. Not as easy to prepare. Liam Manning, actually, the Bristol manager, talked about that. He actually gave a hat tip to his analysts because they'd had to basically work relentlessly to prepare for three games this week. So it is tough in terms of the game cycle, but I still think over the, and now we're about to go into a fortnight's break domestically with another international break. There's been plenty of those. You should be able to do the work necessary, for me, to be able to start to eradicate on the training pitch some of those structural issues. And that also then does bring into play that maybe the personnel aren't good enough. Maybe the demands that Torrup's placing on his players in a defensive setting. He's spoken often about, in terms of centre-backs, he needs centre-backs, ideally, who are Cordoba's template, who can push up, play a high line, squeeze the play, that helps them in terms of on the ball. But if they get the ball played in behind, athletically they've got the powers to recover. He has that. Callum Dall doesn't have that. He is not a defensively minded left back. What he is very, very good in possession, but he is certainly not a defensive left back you can isolate with large spaces to defend against pace. That is not his game. You go back to when he got terrible afternoon against Ben Doak against Middlesbrough down here at Carrow Road. Torrup afterwards said, specifically with Dall, it's risk and reward with him, is what you get with him on the ball, but there's also the negative elements. It feels like, for me, too many of those Norwich defenders, it's risk and reward, and at the moment there's too much tilted towards the negative elements of what they're not bringing in terms of purely keeping the ball out of their net. Yes, you know, you want them, particularly in the way he wants to progress the ball, they have to be comfortable. That includes the keepers. They have to be good in the deep phase build-up play. But is it now time to maybe just tilt it a little bit in terms of the coaching focus and work on, right, okay, yes, that's how we want to play in possession, but this is killing us now. You cannot go to Bristol and effectively gift them two goals, as good as the finishes were, but the conditions that you've created, you've gifted them those two goals. That's decided that game. There's other examples all through the season where they've given teams goals, they've given teams head starts. You're not going to be able to recover enough times to get the points, to get the wins, to get yourself up the table. So you either accept that is the case, and everything we've ever seen with Torrup in terms of our dealings with him, in terms of how he carries himself, in terms of what he's trying to do, he strikes me as a very intelligent head coach. He understands he's come into England and he's had to adapt his outlook and his philosophy, and he's learning all the time. And I'm sure he knows these things, but it's knowing them and then it's implementing them so that we can see real tangible change on the pitch. And again, that might come with another transfer window. It might come next season. I drew the parallel. My point is, last night, you know, you see now where Bristol are under Manning. He came in November of 23. They finished 11th last season, 11 points behind David Wagner's Norwich. I'm sure there was a lot of bumps in the road in that first 6 months in charge. Now you look at that Bristol team, they all seem to know what they're doing. They're cohesive, they're aggressive, there's youth in there, there's experience in there, and they're able to game manage their way to a win last night, when on the balance of chances it should have been a Norwich win. So that's the hope, that in time that we get to this point with Johannes Torup and Norwich. But at the minute, still feels like a bit of a leap of faith, because the evidence isn't circumstantial enough for me to feel that off the ball they're going to be able to deliver what's required to get themselves into, really, into the top six conversation, which by default they were in it this past month or so, but the reality is bitten hard, and now you can see they're nowhere near being good enough to be sustaining a top six push.
Yeah, they've not spent a single day inside the top six all season, which I think tells a story probably of where they are. Obviously no wins against any of the teams who are in the top six at the end of Friday night as well, after Coventry dropped out. Clearly they might be in it by the time this podcast gets out there and whatnot, dependent on what they do. But I think at the core of what you've just said there, Paddy, I pick up on one thing about the risk and reward element, and again, you touched on this. I think there is too many risks for a real lack of reward at the moment, and that's across the team in all facets of play at the moment. And maybe that is the nature of what they're trying to do in terms of building something, and you have to get it to a stage where you do risk things. And you know, there have certainly been points this season where I don't think they've done it risked enough. I think at this moment in time, over the last few games or so, there's probably just gone too far the other way. There's been too much risk for too little reward. Sam, one thing I did want to highlight in terms of defensively, because this probably moves the conversation on to maybe what it could look like post-international break. The change to a three at the back, I thought, was positive. I thought they looked more solid. Maybe that's not a high bar, I recognise that, but they look more solid. Is that one that you would like to see sort of explored a little bit further as we looked ahead to sort of West Brom and the final eight games? Does anyone care, really? I don't know. But, yeah, what are your thoughts?
For me, it all depends on the likelihood that Torup and Norwich use it going forward. I asked Johannes going into the game about sort of the team selection point, and obviously the tactics play into this as well in terms of the playoffs and the unlikelier the playoffs look. Does he ever consider, you know, maybe dropping a Callum Doyle out of the team and putting, you know, giving Rory McConville a few more minutes and trying to look ahead to next season, basically? And he said that Norwich will always try to put out the most competitive team possible, which I can understand. But just from a personal point of view, and this is the feeling that I get from a lot of Norwich fans, the playoffs, I think, are gone now.
And they are gone.
Yeah. So everyone agrees on that. And in that sense, is it really that important for Norwich to try to win 8 games in the Championship as a mid-table Championship side, you know, at all costs? I don't really think so. So for me, so much of the decision making, if I was in Torup's position, would be about what happens from here on out. So if he is considering a back three in the future, if he's seen the evidence of it against Bristol City and he thinks, okay, I've got a few players here who can play that role and who fit into that system, then yeah, I'd like to see it, and I'd like to see it develop over these next 8 games. But if it's purely about results in random Championship games that, if we're being frank, don't matter, I don't think that's really particularly interesting to anybody. So I thought it was okay. I still wonder if they've got the midfielders to do it, because there were times where, I mean, that duo felt like it changed 3 or 4 times in the second half, but you looked at the duo and you thought, this isn't really a defensive midfield duo. You know, it was
not dynamic enough.
No, I think it was Nunez and Slimani at one point. It was Marcondes might have been in there as a number 8 in a midfield two, and I don't think those players really lean into that type of system. So I'm not sure it's the one to use for Norwich going forward. It might be a way of keeping teams guessing and stopping them doing what they have done in the last few weeks, which is just Norwich struggling against a back five. Let's go to a back five, and it seems that that's working every time. So if they have got a system where teams can try to do that and Norwich can instantly stop them by switching to that system quickly, then I think that is a positive. But in terms of 90 minutes as a back three, that only works for me if Torup wants to do it in the long term, and personally I can't really see it with the players that they've got, with the strength with which he wants to stick to his philosophy, and he hasn't really played a back three much either at Norwich or previously at Norwich. So I'd be surprised, and it's not necessarily something I'm desperate to see going forward, but I do agree there were some good signs in that Bristol game, and specifically tactically how it affected what they wanted to do last night. Yeah, I thought it was a positive step, but maybe not one for the long term for me.
Yeah, it was interesting because they used it at the start of the season as kind of an in-game change, didn't they? You know, to see out games or to chase games, and it was effective in parts and not as effective in others. And then it sort of got abandoned. I can't remember at the point it did get abandoned, but they went away from doing that and changing that. And that felt a little bit strange, particularly given their issues and well, documented issues at seeing games out from winning positions. Just finally for this part then, Paddy, I mean, in terms of the week, the collapse against Sheffield Wednesday, the defeat at Bristol City, the draw obviously against Oxford as well, which obviously we spoke about on last week's podcast, the run of form that they're on, the feeling at the moment, feels like it's probably a good time for a little bit of a break where some of this can be assessed maybe a little bit less emotionally.
Not the season on the end, we'll come back in August.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that. We'll stay here till August, that sounds nice.
I'll stay here till August, yeah, but that's another matter. Funny enough, I did ask Johannes last night, you know, what is the plan, you know, is it...
Obviously, he's off to the US, isn't he, I think?
He is, yeah. Now you've mentioned that. Yeah, he didn't mention that, actually. But, yeah, that's what Ben Napper said, wasn't it, previously, that him and a couple of the other executive and Johannes himself. Yeah, that's true, yeah. So, in his absence, I think there'll be one or two days off for the non-internationals and then they'll all reconvene. But, yeah, no, it probably is a good chance to reflect. And that's, on a more strategic level, pretty good to be, you know, in a space with the Atanasios and the Norfolk Holdings people as well. And just maybe just, you know, face-to-face, they can sort of maybe assess where they feel it's at and where it needs to go to. And obviously, it for me, it's building now to quite a big summer again. You know, not so much the outs, more so the ins and how the wheel turns. Obviously, part of that is these out-of-contract lads soon to be. We'll probably get some clarity over that maybe over the next fortnight of this period. I think we can probably, most of us, sort of second guess what's likely in terms of that clump of players, and none, if maybe one, in terms of Marc Andes will still be here, I think, moving forward. So that is the first signal. It's going to be another big summer ahead. But, and I've said it often now in a couple of these recent sort of podcasts, before we get to that point, it's now 8 games. It's not, as Sam rightly says, it's not about trying to win 8 games. It's give these fans, certainly the ones who are starting to doubt it, maybe ones who are even further down that line of, no, we've had enough, let's have a change, because that view's also been expressed as well, rightly or wrongly. But just give the fan base enough optimism in this 8-game block, and obviously that is translated into some positive results as well, clearly, to believe that they can go into a summer, have a big summer, and that the building blocks are in place to have a season which is more akin to, and we've said it, Sunderland this time round. One or two other clubs who've almost gone back to basics, pared it back, tried something new. Bristol, another example, and then come back in a better headspace and much more of a championship promotion ready type of outfit. This squad, this head coach, they're nowhere near that at the moment. And I think most fans still accept that, but it's getting increasingly frustrating that you don't feel the rate of progress is sufficient to be able to buy in. We're in what-if territory now. You know, it could go the way of Farker previously and those seasons. It could equally go the other way. There isn't enough evidence for me stacked up 7-8 months into this to feel with any degree of confidence it's going to go that path or that path. So let's, because obviously it'll be the last end of the season where that will, because it's the most recent part, that will colour a lot of the fans' thinking. I think, you know, you can almost forgive this period and some of the other turbulent periods earlier in the season if they finish on an upward curve. Those younger players start to come through, they get more minutes, they look like they can adapt, they know what the championship's all about. You start to see some connections of what next season could look like, and you're also seeing a head coach who's growing as well in terms of how he's coaching this group of players, for me, particularly out of possession. So this period is actually big for me in the bigger picture. Not necessarily now, because I think the playoffs are clearly gone. It's not in the here and now, but the mood around this football club going into a big summer, going into a season where, make no mistake, he will be judged, and that will be the time to judge him. It'll be the time to judge Napa, even the time to judge Atanasio and Norcott Holdings. Give them a season when they're at their helm, then the time to judge. For me, still not this stage. But that said, you can't give them a free pass for the, what remains of this 8 games of the season.
Agreed, and we are going to be talking more about that rate of progress, some of the frustrations, and probably looking ahead as well a little bit in part two of the podcast. We'll see you in a second for that. Welcome back. You're listening to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. Brought to you in association with First Bus. And we're delighted to be at Redwell Brewery here this afternoon. Lots of people here. They've got some egg chasing on the TV. Wrong sport for me, but apparently some people like it. So there we go. We are, of course, reflecting on what's been a tough week for Norwich City. Clearly 1 point from the last 3 games. Not what anyone hoped for or imagined.
We did.
One of the very good staff here, I think, who was trying to, I think, pick up some glasses that we've left, and we will take them back. Don't worry about that, Adam. We've brought you off the substitute bench at half time. We've done what Johannes Oftorp didn't do on Tuesday night and shuffled the pack early enough. Whilst we've had a positive first half, let's talk about where things are at. I mean, Paddy kind of ended the first part on it, and you can sense the frustration, and I get it, and we've said it all the way through, that fans are emotional, they want to see teams win, and this is the thing about when you talk about transitions and projects, what you really mean is time and giving things time, ultimately, and no football fan wanted to be a football fan to see a team finish 12th and to see them being consistent and to see them make mistakes. That's not why anyone, nobody, as I've said a few times, grew up playing football and dreamt of scoring a winner in a meaningless championship dead rubber. But that's where it is. Everyone wants the outcome of a process and not the process of a process. Where do you think we're at with things? Where are you at with things at the moment in terms of how you're feeling about everything around Norwich City, Johannes Oftorp et al?
Yeah, obviously I can sympathise with the frustration of the fan base. I mean, Tuesday night was nowhere near good enough, irrespective of a transitional season or not. Any team that's 2-0 up at half-time at home, playing as well as they were, should not crumble and lose in the manner they did. But for me, there was more green shoots yesterday, as much as, you know, they were 2-0 down at half-time and it was frustrating. They were carving out the opportunities. It was the defensive side of the game and sort of moments where mistakes were starting to come to the forefront again. And, you know, it's just about trying to strike that balance, I think, a little bit better. You know, they seem to be able to score goals at free will. I think they were the second or third highest maybe in the Championship in terms of goals scored. But it is that defensive side of the game you spoke about in round one of the podcast. Someone goes through for a try. Yeah.
Is that exciting? That's exciting, isn't it?
A lot of people are full of hype for it. I'm not really watching it, but yeah.
Is that Italy Island?
Yeah, Six Nations, yeah.
Okay. Is that good? I don't know.
Not if you're an Ireland supporter, no.
Oh, right, okay. Sorry, Adam, carry on.
But yeah, for me, I think now, between, you know, now and the end of the season, we've got 8 games to go, obviously. I just want to see kind of these players that are going to be more part of it next season, that the likes of McConville, who I thought looked pretty sharp when he came on. Obviously, Norwich were trying to push for the equaliser, and, you know, maybe the sort of supposed pendulum of the game had slightly swung when he came on in terms of the defensive side of the game, what he had to do. But I thought he looked pretty sharp. Jacob Wright, I think, is definitely improving. I felt the Oxford game, he was very good. I thought he was good against Wednesday in the first half. So, for me, a natural successor if Norwich obviously take up the option to sign him, which, you know, if you go by what Johannes said one of the pre-game press conferences pretty recently, that feels likely, then I want to see more of those guys. You know, nothing against the likes of Jakob Sorensen, you know, et al, Ono Hernandez. It does feel unlikely their contracts are going to be renewed by the time we reach the summer, and I think you've got to be starting to prepare for what's coming next season, the players that are going to be involved, the players that will be here, and probably that forward planning and trying to work out what positions need to be addressed. So that I think you can dice this season up however you want. If Norwich would have still been in the top six mix, obviously great, and that's what we all would have wanted, but by the same token, it now gives them a couple more months of sort of building up time into this summer window, which feels absolutely vital they get it bang on. Because, you know, if you kind of go back to that Farker season, they lost some key players, and I understand the concerns, they might lose Sargent, they might lose Sines, but if they get the recruitment right and they spend the money wisely, then who knows what next season could bring, because there's enough green shoots there for me that I'm feeling a lot more positive this time round than I was this time last season, where they actually got in the top six.
Yeah, let me gently push back on one of your points. And Sam made it earlier as well about sort of rotating and pushing through some of the younger players. Again, I agree with that. I think what maybe, to play devil's advocate again, some would say, would be, well, where does that start and stop? Because do you then start saying, well, we're not going to have Josh Sargent next season, and we're not going to have Borja Sainz next season, and we might not have Marcelino Nunez, so we don't bother with them three for the rest of the season? It can become quite blurred, can't it, quite quickly, if you go down that route.
Yeah, it can be a challenge, but...
You're talking specifically about the ones who are out of contract.
I think for me it's more those that, with certainty, that if you know, those internally within the football club, Ben Napa, Yanisov Torok, have already made the decision, which for me, the fact that you hear Angus Gunn speaking in the week, no contact between him and his representatives and the football club, is what he framed it. Obviously Torok slightly changed it in his kind of pre-game thoughts, but if there's kind of a feeling and decision already made on those individuals, they're not going to be here. For me, even if they don't feel they can get Callum Dall back next season, do they really persist with it between now and the end of the season, where there is, as much as there's a feeling that Borja Sainz and Josh Sargent won't be Norwich players this season, you can't say with the same level of certainty, because they're both going to be under contract. So unless a team comes in and a bid's put on the table that's acceptable to Norwich City, and I think we've seen the way they operate over recent summers, they will stick out for the fee that they feel these players are worth to maximise the value, to then go into the market and reinvest. Therefore, you can't say with 100% certainty that Josh Sargent won't be a Norwich player next season, as much as it probably feels pretty likely he won't be. So for those reasons, I think you've probably got to persist, and there's probably a lack of, or maybe a more lack of options. I know Antti Siinats is obviously probably the natural successor at the moment, but he is still featuring in the team, where for me, like Jacob Wright, no minutes last night. If you're going to sign him, you've got to be playing him, because he's obviously going to be a crucial part of what they're trying to do in between sort of here and now, and certainly next season.
Yep, I agree. I mean, Paddy, you spoke about Bristol City earlier. I think there's two interesting parallels here. So there is the Bristol City example. You think back to the end of last season, Norwich played Bristol City and Swansea in two home games. Bristol City and Swansea were very good those days. They got draws, they deserved draws against a Norwich team that went on to finish in the top six and in the playoffs. You look at the respective directions of those two clubs. Bristol City obviously now in the playoffs under Liam Manning, looking very strong. A team that is efficient and effective. I didn't think they were a million miles ahead of Norwich, if I'm honest, based on the game last night. Clearly in the areas that matter, they are. You compare that with Swansea and Luke Williams, who at the time, I think most people would have watched that Carrow game and gone, well, yeah, decent shouts to be a team that maybe can do what Bristol City have done this year. They haven't. It's gone the other way. Williams is out of a job. They are in a different state. I recognise both clubs are maybe in a slightly different position in terms of their stability and the structure, and clearly there are wider, bigger issues at Swansea. We're not a Swansea City podcast, so we don't need to go into those. But I guess my point is, it shows that probably where Norwich are at the moment, in the same way as maybe there is a real, it feels like there's two camps at the moment, a real camp of people who feel that this will come good and it's about time and it's about patience, and then maybe the other camp who feel like they've seen enough, who are frustrated with some of the errors that we spoke about in part one not being resolved. Probably shows that neither of those camps and anyone in between, and even the people driving this really in terms of Torup and Napa, nobody has that clarity and that definitiveness on what way it's going to go. And this probably is a long point, but it comes to where I am on it, which is I think we need to see more, and we need to let things settle, because Norwich have been in the cycle of getting rid of managers, changing players constantly, and over the last three years, and it got to a stage last season where it became very now or never, it became very short term. They ended up with an older team that was geared to win. They didn't win, they didn't get up, they failed, and so then you do have to rebuild. And I think it is now worth, irrespective of how frustrated people are with it, of just letting them see if it can get to a stage, as you said earlier, where it can blossom into something that we all hope it can become. So that's kind of where I am on it, and I think it is just ultimately letting the whole thing settle and letting it play out, because I guess we're probably back here in 17, 18, and we keep going back to that stage. And just because this feels like 17, 18, it doesn't necessarily mean at all that next year is 18, 19. But can you imagine if Norwich City would have pulled the plug on Daniel Farke after year one? So that's kind of my feelings on it at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, take you back 24 hours less than, in fact, second leg embarrassment against Leeds last May. Thank you, David, but good night. Roll it on a month or so, Yanisov Torok comes in. In fact, go back to the day when the club's official statement announcing David Wagner had been departed. Quotes from Ben Napa, we're going in a new direction. I'm paraphrasing, but I think that was the phrase he used. Club statement, new direction. Then in comes Yanis Torop, young, upwardly mobile coach with a clear philosophy, clear belief in blooding young players. That is your new direction. Massive contrast from, as you say, Wagner and the last throw of the dice. A lot of older, experienced players, now or never. Didn't work, new direction. I don't recall too many Norwich fans, if I'm honest, at that point saying, no, we don't want a new direction. We want to stick with, you know, spending lots of money that we don't have on players who are coming to the end of their days.
Who can't sell and get money for.
Who can't run, in some cases.
Who are you talking about?
We won't put any names to that. But I'm being flippant. But ultimately, I didn't get a lot of sense either on social or speaking to fans, or we do obviously lots of, you know, Q&As and sort of live shows and feedback from fan bases. There was no pushback there that we don't want a new direction. So if that's the case, you've got to row in behind it. Now, if people want to bail out of that 7 months in, for me, that's premature. You know, for all the reasons we've discussed in this podcast, every other podcast of late, around the strategy, around the mid to longer term. You bring in Oscar Swartow, teenager. You bring in Antti Cernac, early 20s. Jurasek now, early 20s. I could go on. McConville, another teenager. Right, on loan, but there's a buy option. Torrett wants to take up that buy option. Teenager. You cannot expect, in short order, that clutch of players, and plenty more beside them, the ones who've come up through the academy. Gabe Forsyth, sadly, season over injury. Young player. Mahovo, young player.
Callum Fisher.
In what world could you expect to bring all these players through, some more exposed than others, and expect it all to come together and Norwich to be doing what Leeds, Sheffield United, Burnley, Sunderland, I'll go down the table, Bristol City, Coventry, West Brom. It's completely unrealistic.
They are all further ahead.
And so that's why I can't quite get my head around about anybody who's in the camp of pull the drawbridge up now, this guy is out of his depth, whatever, he's not able to deal with English football, whatever, all some of the other stuff you see on social media, get rid, let's go again. I just don't see that view at all. That to me makes no sense when there was no pushback last May when it was new direction. And let's be honest, it wasn't a new direction out of choice, it was necessity. They had to go this way. Financially, they had no other choice. They had to shift the wage bill down, the finances down. Post-parachute world, even with the Atanasio and Norfolk Holdings backstop, that's not how they operate. They're not going to be a cash cow. They're not just going to like throw money at it. They will back the strategic decisions to go after a Jurasek, go after a Cernac, and I'm sure this summer we'll see more evidence of that. But because they believe that there's players there they're bringing in of a certain age, of a certain profile, underneath a coach like Torb who can develop and has a track record of developing players, that they will, in the short term, improve Norwich's first team. In the longer term, harvest more in transfer fees than Norwich have outlaid. That is the model. They've been clear, consistent in the messaging. At no point could any Norwich fan turn around and say, I didn't know they were going to do this. I didn't expect them to do this. I didn't know this was what they were signing us up to. Been very clear in the messaging. Has the progress on the pitch been haphazard? Has it been stop-start? Yes. Are there reasons in mitigation? Yes. Injuries, disciplinary elements. Torop learning on the job. That's another, for me, mitigating factor. All of those you cannot dispute for me. So for me, it really comes back to, if you wanted to go in a more optimistic, youthful based direction of travel, which could be, hopefully, if it came together, and this is where we cross reference with Farker, there's no guarantee it will, but if it comes together, what a ride that was. 18-19, the brand of football, cutting a sway through the championship, Buendia, Pukki, all of those dramatic moments, all those memories and games that will live in the memory, anybody who was lucky enough to be in the grounds. Why wouldn't you want a bit more of that? And the reality is, there's no guarantees that this is going to deliver that, but I think there's more chance this could deliver it than if they had continued down the path of Wagner, Smith, tried and trusted older players, try for one roll of the dice. I think there's something far more holistic, far more, as a fan I would imagine, far more exciting to buy into. And if it comes off, what a ride you're going to be taking on. So it's worth the gamble for me, because really they didn't have an alternative. There wasn't another method. It had to be this way. So let's go all in and let's try and make the best strategic decisions they can at all levels, from Torop, Napa, Atanasio, And if those guys get more decisions right than wrong, then there's going to be some good times down the road. Whether that actually translates into Norwich getting out of the Championship and then getting in the Premier League and sustaining themselves in Premier League, nobody knows. Nobody can sit here and just and say that will happen. But the alternative for me, I don't know what the alternative would have been. You know, the alternative would have been waiting for somebody to come along who's going to write out a lot of checks, burn a hole in their vast fortunes, and then get tired of it. And then where do you go? We've seen plenty of other clubs try that route, and where's it ended? You know, in many cases they're in League One, maybe even lower than that. So that's not a path I don't think too many Norwich fans would have wanted to go down willingly. So for me, it's less about is this the right strategy to embark upon. It's give them the space, give them the time, give them another transfer window. I mean, you can't tell me that what you've seen in the last two transfer windows doesn't engender a degree of optimism, that they've lowered the age profile, lowered the wage bill, brought in young talent, which if some of that talent catches, then who knows where they could take the football club. So another transfer window, and then let's see. I mean, I saw a post earlier today about a Norwich fan saying, look, for me, I'm not even going to look to judge it until we're maybe 12, 15 games into next season, because by then I think you can start to take a measure which is based on a season of Torup, two or three transfer windows, hopefully none of the same volume of injury related issues which can serve in mitigation. That's the time for me to start assessing, is he the guy who can drive this forward, or is he not the guy? At the moment it just seems very, very premature. But having said all that, that for me is why these next eight games, to convince those ones who are wavering, just to row back in behind this and see where it can go.
Yeah, I agree with basically everything you've said there. Although, you know, I'm a bit surprised that Danny Bart and Adam Forshaw didn't get you more excited than Jose Cordoba and Jacob Wright. That's a different point. I would.
Getting twanged as well. We won't go there. Right,
let's. He gets far too many mentions on this and every other podcast. So yeah, let's leave that there. Yeah, I mean it's. Yeah, it's interesting, I think, and it's interesting to see where people are at it, because everything you said there, I completely agree with. I think most people will agree with. But I think it's equally, that gets conflated with, oh, well, they're getting a free pass. They're not getting any criticism. They're not having questions asked of them. And I think, as we've hopefully shown in part one, you can do both. You don't have to, you know, it's not mutually exclusive. You don't have to do one or the other. You can be a believer in terms of the long-term project and recognise defensively they're pretty bad. I think you can say both of those things at the same time. I think it's as I said earlier, nobody has any real certainty how it's going to go or where it's going to go. But I know I'd like to see more of it play out before. You know, I've got no real definitive view on, you know, whether this guy's going to be brilliant and he's going to take him to the Premier League, or whether he's going to crash and burn and he's going to be out of a job in 12 months. I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. He doesn't know. But I think we need more evidence of what a team looks like when maybe it's a bit more consistent. He's got consistent options available. And, you know, this part of a process, a project, a plan, whatever words you want to use, is always difficult. And part of a process and a project and a plan is that you make mistakes and you learn from them. And you saw that Farker year one. They made a lot of mistakes. They won 11 of their 15 games having less than 50% of the ball. That isn't what we remember of Daniel Farker. So it doesn't need to be defining, but it does need to be a block that they used to learn from. And that is the point that I'd like to make going into year two. And it doesn't mean as well that it's going to be, well, you just have a year like this, and because it happened before, second year, bang, you win the league with 90 plus points. It might be what Sunderland did, where they finished, 16th last year with a really young group of players. They polished that. They added some experience. They added some quality. They invested in a really good centre forward. But they maintained that strategy of youth. Look where they are this season. I think if Norwich City could, you know, there is no reason why Norwich City cannot replicate that. Clearly, Sunderland had a change of head coach as well to spark that. But you look at the work that Coventry have done over a long period of time, that Middlesbrough have done over a long period of time, that, you know, prior to this season, maybe we could even put Ipswich in that camp, that they've done over a period as well. Brentford, if you want to go even longer. So I personally have not seen enough to say with any real certainty, nope, this isn't happening, bin it off. And I've not seen anything to say that you're blindly optimistic and to go with it. I think it's just one that will be answered with time. The final point that I wanted to make, and I maybe come to you on this, Adam, is increasingly I'm seeing the term, I'm not seeing progress. I'm really struggling with that because I'm not quite sure clearly, and we've mentioned some of the areas where they aren't making progress, but there is also a lot of good about this Norwich City team in possession. You know, we talked last year endlessly about the need for a style of play. Well, they've got one. You might not agree with it. You might think that when they get promoted to the Premier League, they'll get absolutely demolished playing it, and that's a different debate. But in terms of they've got a clear style of play, we see it implemented. Does it change? Does it tweak? Yes, but the fundamentals and the principles are there. They create chances. They score goals. They're entertaining to watch. They've developed young players individually. Collectively, I think we have seen a growth in some areas of the team as well. I'm really struggling with the "I'm not seeing progress" comment, if I'm being really honest.
Well, yeah, you've got to learn to walk before you can run, and I think that's kind of where Norwich are at the moment. You know, there's a lot of good, positive things. You know, some of the performances this season at home, you know, the 6-1 demolition of Plymouth, the 4-2 against Luton, the 4-0 against Hull, even the games against Leeds and Sheffield United, they competed with the best two teams in the league at the moment. Quite, you know, and to be fair, on another day, probably could have beaten both of those if certain scenarios would have played out. And for me, that leads me to feel a lot more positive. Even the away form post-Christmas has dramatically improved. You know, they were gritty at Watford in the way they had to grind that out. I know they were down to 10 men. Luton exactly the same. Hull on another day, they should definitely win that game. They just weren't clinical in sort of the key moments and conceded a pretty soft goal again, which has kind of been the point of this whole podcast. It's just trying to eradicate that element. And I think if they can get that sorted and they can continue to keep the tap open at the top end of the pitch with the talent they've got, and even accounting for losing potentially Borja Sainz and Josh Sargent in the summer, for me, there's enough with Lewis Dobbin if they can try and, you know, get him back in the building. I thought, you know, he was showing enough strides, a couple of goals, a lot of confidence, and the fact he was in a team that he felt part of, you know, he felt settled in. And I think, you know, you could see that there was a player there that's certainly going to grow and develop in time, and under this manager and this system, could be a good bit of business if they could manage to get that bit done. Antti Siinäs, I've certainly felt in the last couple of months, has started to look a little bit more confident. You know, the, what is it now, 11 goal contributions, I think, this season. And
more than Sainz in his first season.
Exactly. And a young man who's, you know, I think you speak to anyone internally, a little bit shy, a little bit more reserved. And I think over time, when he gets used to the city, the culture, the league, he will naturally start to grow, and he'll start to develop as a player and a person off the pitch as well. And I think there's a player there, clearly the raw material is there, he's shown enough quality at different points this season to develop. Jurasek, obviously we're yet to really see a lot of, but the bits we have seen, I think he looks explosive. He looks like a player that could be pretty useful at this level. Obviously they've got to try and get the output out of him next season, that's the key for any winger. But there's enough exciting players in the building. Svartal, I think, you know, another one who at different times this season I thought, well, how have Norwich managed to get a player like that? It's only because he's not quite developed yet. He's 18. You know, it's going to take time. I think eventually he might reach the Premier League because he's got the natural ability there to do so. So, you know, I don't see how you can look at this current group, what they've produced at different moments this season. You can say the ceiling's really high, and when they're poor, you know, they're really low on the floor. And that's something they've got to address. They've got to get the balance, 100%. But there's enough there. I'm positive enough for next season. If you'd have spoke to me this time last year and it was the current roster that they had, and you mentioned quite a few of them there, I would have felt a lot more downbeat, a lot more negative for what this season would have been. I think you could easily end up like Stoke, who, you know, I think are a prime example of a club that generally keep hold of experienced bodies. They recruit experienced players.
But also on them, they've picked up and dropped projects and coaches. Yeah. They haven't seen anything through. And this is sort of the point. If you want to avoid that, at some point, the solution has to be bigger than, well, we just sat the manager, we just signed a load of new players, and actually you give something time and to build it. And then, let's, you know, and as Paddy said, if 15 games in, they haven't improved, we're talking about a defensive horror show, we're talking about inconsistency, well, then there's the time to say, well, do you know what, maybe this isn't the guy. But that doesn't mean the whole strategy then is broken as well. So, I interrupted you, yeah. But I think it's... I just think it's very short-sighted at the moment to be that definitive on it, personally.
Yeah, I've said from the start of this season, I'm judging them next season. This season, I want to see positive signs. I've seen enough of those to feel this has got the potential to work. It might not work. But I'd rather that than what we had last season, where it just felt like they were going down a garden path that was going to lead downwards rather than potentially upwards. And you look at Brentford, you know, and I think they're a good example. For years, they kind of flirted with getting in and around it. You know, they lost the likes of Morpay and Watkins. They recruit cleverly. They get Tony and they get Mbeumo. They get Visser and they get to the Premier League. And look where it's taken them. Obviously, they need a coach with a set style of play to do that. And they've got that in Thomas Frank, who's, you know, pretty clever in what he's done. Who's to say Yohannes Torup can't be that? He's also learning as well. It's his first year in England, first year in the Championship. They've got a change in sporting director 18 months ago. They've got a change at the top with the ownership. All these players have arrived. It's going to take time. It requires time. 10 games in next season, judge them. And if they're not performing and the ceiling's not high enough and the floor's really still this as low as it has been at certain points this season, 100%, you know, they deserve some criticism. And I think at that point, I think most of those internally would accept that.
Yeah, agreed. And it goes back to the point, doesn't it? It's easy, I think, when you're where Norwich were last season. And then however much we can argue about it, they won games, they got into the top six. It's easy at that point to say, well, you know what, we want to play with young players, we want to be more progressive, we want to build something. It's a lot harder when you're in that, and you're seeing the type of things that we are seeing to live through. Everyone wants the ripe berries of the project. They don't want to sort of watch it grow into that, and that's understandable because fans want to win, and it's not taking away from that. Everyone wants to win, and it's always just about building, I guess, a team and a culture and a level of performance that enables you to win more consistently. Right, let's end with our Just the Ticket segment. This, of course, in association with our sponsors, First Bus. Paddy, let's come to you first and foremost. It's been a horrible week, a pretty bad week for Norwich City, as we've discussed. What positive people, players, things would you pick out of it? Slim pickings, maybe.
Well, you put me on the spot there, Con. I should have had somebody ready to go here, shouldn't I? Over the last two games.
Yes, yeah.
So who played well in the first half against Sheffield and who played well in the...
Do you want me to kick it off to give you a bit of thinking time? I'm going to go Borja Sainz. I think a return to goal scoring form. I think his performances have been better as well, better decision making. I think, you know, I've been quite open in saying I've been frustrated with him at points this season because he's clearly an outstanding goal scorer, brilliant, and, you know, quite frankly, goodness knows where Norwich City would be without him this season. But I think I've seen more sort of polish to his performances, more creativity, more unselfishness at points as well. You want some of that selfish edge because it's some of what makes him a really good goal scorer. But it's been better, and it's been good to see him return to the goals. I think you could see on Tuesday night it looked and felt like a massive weight off his shoulders. It was a good finish as well. Both goals were good finishes in both games. Sadly, we haven't really spoken about them too much. Have you thought of one now, Paddy? No. Right, I'll go to Adam. Have you got one, Adam?
I think Anis Ben Slimani for his first half against Sheffield Wednesday. Two assists, and I mean, Torup was pretty good on it actually at the press conference before this game. You know, just that kind of freedom and sort of the license he has now, the fact that Kenny's back in the team and he's not having to worry quite so much about that defensive side of the game. He's sort of freed him up a little bit, and we're starting to see those kind of positive signs I think we saw when he first arrived at the football club on loan, and that's why Norwich decided there was enough sort of material there to sign him on a permanent deal at, you know, a relatively good price, certainly for a player that could be a good squad player between, you know, now and whenever he decides to leave the football club. So for those 45 minutes, two assists, yeah, worth a shout.
What a 45 minutes it was as well. I'll have you got anyone
I've
yet?
Got one,
you've got one now. Okay, I was going to throw
you
a few options. I was going to throw a few options for you. Go on.
Who was your options?
Well, I was going to say you could have Callum Fisher making his 50th appearance. You could have the fans at Bristol City if you wanted to go down that route.
Too easy.
No, go on then.
I'm going to go McConville, only because a lot of what we've talked about in this second part of the pod is about the future and what it could look like. And it wasn't so much what he did when he was on the pitch, but the way he embraced the opportunity, and it was only a few minutes at the end, but, you know, there was two or three bursts, and he looked fearless, and a lot of this is about the character to be able to be put into these situations and handle it. And I'm not saying there's an issue with other players in the squad in terms of they feel a little bit inhibited and their personalities aren't really embracing it, but everything I see from him and everything anybody you speak to about him, you know, Johannes said it recently again, that, which I thought was quite telling, when him and Ben first sat down with McConville and his representatives prior to doing that deal, it wasn't just a one way, it was like, no, he wanted to know about X, Y, and Z regarding Norwich. And Johannes then came away and he said to, first thing he said to Ben after they'd broken up, we need this guy in this club, because he is, irrespective of the fact that he's at a Premier League club and he's clearly Northern Ireland international, has that ability. He's the right type of character to drive this forward, because he's clearly somebody who has that potential to be a leader and to, for others to follow. And for me, you know, we touched on it earlier, I think I'd like to see a little bit more of him down the stretch now, because he is going to be part of the future, whereas there's one or two in that group who maybe are on their way out in terms of being the frontline option. So maybe what we saw at Bristol, albeit a small sample, was a little bit of a change under the guard. So yeah, McConville.
Yeah, I tell you what, when he hit that volley to begin with, I thought, goodness me, what a story that would have been if that would have nestled in the top corner. I really liked there was a burst, wasn't there, where he stepped out of defence and played a ball out that was really nice as well. I think it was 8 minutes or something like that, but it was a very positive 8 minutes, and that's all we've had to cling on to this week, which maybe tells you all about Norwich City's progress. International break now. We probably very likely. Going to record something over the international break that's maybe a little bit of a scene setter for the final eight games and beyond. Sadly, the initial plan was to do something of a playoff push variety, but given the recent form over the last few weeks, that has been all but killed. So there we go. We will see you for that one. Enjoy the international break. Enjoy the respite from No Norwich City and having that stress in your life. And of course, we'll have plenty of content along the way to scratch that itch for you. Big thank you to Redwell Brewery as well for hosting us. Thank you to our sponsors, First Bus. Thank you to the guys as well. And thank you to you for watching and listening. See you in the next one.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.